You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
We're at Hendox on a Monday night. It's after a crew win, the first in weeks. So the panel is full of people. We'll try to get to everybody here tonight. It's another Massive Report podcast brought to you by 180 Property Development. And we thank them for their sponsorship of the Massive Report podcast. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. I don't think we've ever had this many people on the panel. There's Murph. Hi, Murph.
Hello.
There's Alex Stanek. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
There's Bart Logan, last seen shooting water guns filled with white clawed people in the parking lot.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
I can confirm.
Mike Kroski is here. Ralph is not here, still mending from his surgery. And as always, we send thoughts to Ralph. And, of course, behind the board, there aren't enough microphones for Sam to have one. Sam Fahmy, we thank you for being here. My name is Brian Phillips. Crew 2, Montreal 1. When I walked into the stadium on Saturday, I don't know what it was. Maybe I was delirious from the heat, but I had such a great feeling about this match. I sat down, I go, I don't know. I'm just absorbing some positive energy here, not to get all esoteric on you.
That's what happens when Josh Williams comes back.
Right. And it wasn't more than a few minutes into the game when my feeling was confirmed. I was seeing a team that looked confident. And part of that had to be the draw with Chicago on Wednesday and how that came about. But they just came out on the front foot. Am I wrong here? Was I delirious from the 97-degree heat?
No.
What did you guys see?
No, absolutely. It just kind of felt like going into this week, the points were going to come because there were two teams that were very much able to get some points and certainly a win at home.
Did somebody predict that?
Somebody may have, yes.
Yeah, who had the 2-1 scoreline?
Well,
I don't know what Mike's scoreline was, but he said 4 points or 4 points from those next two games.
And yeah.
He was, in fact, correct.
Yay. I just thought the crew could steal a point on the road. Chicago's kind of hapless right now. And then at home, it just felt like there has to be a home win sooner rather than later. So there's your 4 points right there, and it happened. It's great because the Porter and the team and the fans, it's what's needed right now.
Can we talk about the Chicago game real quick?
Yeah, I would like to do that because it seems like it was such a long time ago because so much has happened in the last few days. But that goal at the end, you saw young Diaz for the first time, and this kid has that thing, you know? I mean, he stands out. He needed no time to fit into this team. He hasn't been in the starting 11 yet, but he's already made a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what happens as a team when you have guys that you can bring off the bench that can provide a spark, which is something this team really hasn't had much this year, especially once national team call-ups and injuries started to happen. And, you know, you mentioned Diaz, but Romario Williams, too. I thought
sure.
Not only did he score the goal, but came in, played well, held up the ball well. But just the fight that they showed, you know, we didn't see that. I mean, we've talked that this team's played well in certain games and, you know, probably deserved to win. Well, sometimes you just have to go out and do it. And not that they won that game in Chicago, but to go down twice. You saw that after they scored the first equalizer, the celebration between Sosa, Argudo, and Zardes, just like a relief to come back from behind. And then they give up another one. You're like, oh, here it goes again. Like,
right.
You know, and to score, especially late, you know, that just like, it's a big boost. And, you know, that's why, like you said, Brian, that's why I went into the game on Saturday feeling pretty good because that was finally the point, I guess, that they needed to just have something positive happen. And, you know, Caleb Porter even said after the game, like, this shouldn't feel like a win, but because we've been so poor results-wise, like, it really does. He owned that fact, which, you know, I'm not sure every coach does after a road draw, but it was a good point. You come from behind twice, and, you know, I think it bled into the start that you mentioned on Saturday. And, you know, now they've got to build on that momentum again, and we can get more on that later. But, I thought that was a really positive result to kind of get things going in that week.
Well, you know, a lot of people speculated that perhaps Porter had lost the locker room. And I never felt that because, I mean, the team was always working, always playing. In that game in particular, you really saw the fight, as you mentioned. So to me, it's just sometimes it takes you to having to go through these struggles as a team that's still kind of finding itself and its identity. And, you know, I don't know. It might be too little too late. But it's good to see something like this happen. This could be a fork in the road for the rest of the season.
Caleb has not lost the locker room. I will, you know, talking to these guys. I mean, you know, every coach has guys that like him more than others and whatnot. But you know, he's definitely got these guys' attention. Mm-hmm. You know, from what we see in training. You know, it's not like they're out there lollygagging around. I mean, I think, like I said, if they were losing games 3-0 and you know no one was trying, then maybe you start to. But this team, I mean, they've been in every game. I mean, mm-hmm. with a few exceptions, but and I can say I'm very confident that this team is not, or Caleb has not lost this team, despite the results, which is impressive because if you go 1-13-1 or whatever it was that they were, it's pretty easy to lose the locker room, especially sure. as a brand new head coach.
Right,
and I think especially if you this is Berhalter's group in a lot of ways, and to kind of have to have somebody else come in and pick up where the current U.S. national team coach left off is always kind of a tough ask. But hopefully this is the start of something bigger. And I'm not 100% convinced it will be. I'm still a little bit worried that we're going to kind of fall back into the form that we've seen the last couple months. But having the guys get their confidence back is definitely the first step that you need. And once you start believing in the system, maybe then you can start to implement it. Because last few months, I think they looked really lost. Last two games, I think they looked a lot less lost. They looked like they had a purpose. They knew what that purpose was, finally. And they made it happen. So it's definitely positive signs.
It's been a whir of activity. So the 2-2 draw in Chicago, we come home, we ship Bendick to Philadelphia. And
nothing of value is lost.
And Eloy Room comes in, and again, he comes out of the field. None of us have ever seen him before in person. We saw him on TV a few weeks ago in the Gold Cup, but he immediately just had that presence. You felt it. What do you guys think of his performance, and what kind of challenges does a goalie have with his first match with a new club?
I mean, I thought what I noticed so much of is that the chances they were getting, especially on those corners and where Montreal eventually beat them, but Crew were not marking on those, and he made some big saves on those and just good positioning even to have a chance, even on the one that they did score on. So, I mean, I think for a goalie coming into a new system who's, you know, basically
he practiced one time.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And he slump busted.
Yeah.
I mean,
Thursday he practiced with the reserves because they were traveling back from Chicago. And then Friday was a full team session. That was it. Continue.
And, I mean, that gets to the point. That just shows the quality, I think, that you see. I mean, aside from the fact that they're willing to, you know, move Bednick as soon as it's clear that he's going to be available, or that Room was going to be available, and that, you know, Porter would just thrust him in. I think, you know, going back to one of those the points earlier about, you know, Porter and Alex saying that this was sort of very much Greg Williams' team. I think this is part of
Greg
Caleb
Berhalter.
Porter. Or sorry, Greg. Yeah, Greg Berhalter.
He's thinking
I'm still
of Josh.
Thinking of Josh. Still thinking
we'll
of
get
Josh.
To him.
I mean, how could you not?
Right? We'll
exactly.
get to him.
Freudian slip, but this is him, you know, finally getting a chance to put a stamp on this team. And you show he's putting, as his players, the new guys that he scouted, that his crew, you know, got, the Luis Diaz's, the Romario Williams, he's getting them opportunities immediately. And I think it is, while it's still, you know, very much Greg Berhalter's team, I think there is a little bit of a changing of the guard sense with the moves that have happened in these past few weeks.
Well, we're a lot younger than we were a few weeks ago.
Absolutely.
When you start to put an age on everybody on the pitch, you go, oh, wow. Well, we needed to get younger. We've talked about that.
Well, you know, one of the things, just a quick point about Room, I think we're aware, just if you watched any of the Gold Cup, we're aware of his abilities. We mm-hmm. saw that. Now it's, can he get in sync with his back line and the rest of the team? Can he get a feel for how to build out of the back from him? It's going to be different than with the way Berhalter did it with Steffen, right? But I think the biggest thing is him just commanding that back line and understanding the nuances, who's going to step where, when they're going to step, all this kind of stuff. And that's just going to come with time. So you're talking about what's going to be the biggest thing to look for. I think that's it.
Well, and his leadership, I think that's something that Zach was very good at, especially this year for sure, last year, and he developed that the year before. This backline doesn't have a ton of that, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the center backs, Josh Williams is a very talkative guy, but if he's not in there, Gaston Saro doesn't talk a ton, Jonathan Mensah doesn't talk a ton. You've got Alex Carnali and Abubakar Keita, who are both young guys that, you know, aren't expected to necessarily be the vocal guys. And they do talk, but it's, you know, you need someone to command that backline. And Zach was great at that. And just, you know, even as the ball's coming down the field, you can see Zach, you know, yelling at his guys, getting people in position. And that's a pretty underrated thing. But when a goalie's able to do that because he can see the field in front of him, it helps tremendously. And, you know, just from one game, it looks like Eloy Rim had no problem with that, despite the fact that he didn't even know barely knew everyone's name. Like, you know,
right.
Like,
hey, you! Get over there.
I mean, let's literally shake hands beforehand just to make sure we know everybody.
But I think that these guys also are familiar with Room and what he was able to accomplish, not only in the Gold Cup, but historically. And, you know, that's got to be a confidence boost right there.
Sure.
I think in the last few weeks, or really in the last few months, you've seen a number of kind of defensive lapses where guys seem to panic. You saw it. From Carnali a couple times, Gaston Saro a few times in a couple different games, where they just would make clumsy challenges, kind of last-minute efforts to prevent the ball from getting to the keeper. And I wonder if some of that is, hey, we got bailed out a bunch by Zach Steffen, and Bendik, you know, maybe he's not going to be able to do this, so I might as well give it a try and make this challenge. And if it goes poorly, it goes poorly. We conceded a lot of penalties, so having that presence back there is going to put those guys at ease a little bit that, hey, I'm going to let him go through and see if Room can make this save. I don't have to risk a red card here. I don't have to risk a penalty here.
We can't afford to give up goals anymore like we did in the Chicago game on the volley.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy had an hour
to
drop the ball to his right foot and pounded into the back of the net. That was embarrassing, and that has to stop.
Sure.
So that's what we want to see. Keita, what do we think?
I was just going to bring him
what
up.
What do we think? I think he's holding his own out there, as young as he is.
Okay, so this is a kid who, you know, if people don't know his backstory.
Born in 2000.
Well, yes, that is
seriously,
true.
Seriously, though, just take that in for a second.
Well, here, this will feel even worse. He didn't start playing competitive soccer until he was 13 years old.
You are kidding. I did not know that.
He was born in the United States.
Right.
They moved back to Ghana.
Uh-huh.
Ghana, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they moved back. He was born in New Jersey, moved back to Ghana, moved to Columbus. He wasn't a soccer player because his time in Ghana, like, everyone was better than him. So they move back here. So he eventually starts playing soccer to meet friends. Is like, I need to make more friends, is what he told me.
Look at his friends now.
Yeah, right. And so he starts playing for Santos, the local club team here. Plays for his high school for a year or two in Westerville. And then the academy team brings him in. And he started on, like, about as low as they could put him in the academy because he didn't know tactics. He didn't know, you know, he's a physical guy. He was always a physical guy.
Yeah.
Good specimen, and, you know, year by year, you know, learned quickly, picked things up, and was able to move up very quickly as through the academy ranks, and obviously, you know, played at Virginia last year and
high level
got
program.
The sign. And then coming into this year, they were like, this is a guy who's going to go out on loan. You know, we're not, you know, we probably won't even see him this year. That was the thought coming into the season, and obviously injuries and whatnot have given him an opportunity, and let's not discredit what the under-20 World Cup did for him, because I think that was getting called in and then just playing was a huge boost to his confidence. And he made mistakes, but he never, and I think this is the biggest thing, is the mistakes don't seem to get to him. It's Zach Steffen-esque. Like, if you remember that first year with Zach, he made plenty of mistakes, but it doesn't seem to affect him.
You know what I noticed? At one point in the game, he was unhappy with a call. I forget what the call was.
Yeah,
but
I do
remember. Right in the official's ear. And I thought, whoa. Yeah, that's
That's a 19-year-old kid in his, fourth MLS game, third MLS game?
And he was giving it to him, and I liked it.
I like what I've seen from him. I know Caleb Porter, he told us the other day that, you know, there's a number of guys that maybe wouldn't have seen the field if it weren't for all these injuries, and you know, maybe this will end up being a blessing in disguise, but Caleb singled out Abubakar Keita and was like, this kid might be further along than we thought, and he's going to be in our plans, you know, not only going in the future, which is what we thought, but he's going to play this year. You know, even if guys get healthy, he's going to be around the team and, you know, fighting for spots, which, you know, again, you take that story into account. And, I mean, Mike, you coach soccer. Guy that starts playing at 13 years old, how quickly makes an MLS team and is now starting
at
19?
That's crazy. Unheard of. I mean, that's unicorn stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you've got guys by the time they're 13 over in Europe that if they're a top-flight youth player, they are in whatever professional club's academy well before that, right?
Well, that also gives you an idea of his ceiling. I mean, look where he is now after just 6 years of playing. Imagine where he's going to be in 4 years. You know, at 23, he's essentially playing at the same amount of time of like a 17 or 18 year old would for
like
the.
Yeah. Well, and that's what Caleb kind of said was, you know, maybe he's not our starting center back for the next few years. Maybe he's that third or fourth guy. But, you know, in 3, 4, 5 years, when you start to get into a center back's, you know, the beginning of a center back's prime, you've got a guy, you know, that you've had in your system that, you know, came through the academy too, so it's not like he was drafted and, you know, then had to learn a new system and whatnot. And while we're on the topic of center backs, you know, you mentioned Alex Crenali having a few mistakes, and Caleb Porter obviously called him out. He came in and played well, I thought, for Josh Williams, and Caleb Porter mentioned that today too, which I thought, you know, for the heat that he got about calling out Crenali, I think he intentionally wanted to make sure Alex got, you know, his dues. And, you know, say what you will about Caleb, but I think he's going to give it to you straight both ends of
those,
the stick.
See, those are the type of things that I think a lot of people don't understand about Caleb Porter. He's not throwing guys under the bus. He's trying to light a fire under them. Some guys respond to it. Others don't. Those that don't are going to be out. Those that do, they're going to bring in. That's what people don't seem to understand. If you read, you know, Facebook or Twitter or whatever about people, you know, saying he just blames players. No, he's trying to get players to play up to their level.
Right.
If he didn't really trust Crenali, he wouldn't be in. Now, granted, we have had
a litany of
injuries. Right. But what I mean is to trust him in that role and then to call him out. He's saying, look, you got to step it up or you're going to be shipping out. And, again, he did the right thing after the fact and really, you know, gave him credit where credit was due.
Well, and I think that the fact that we have guys like Crenali and guys like Keita who are getting minutes, this might be one of the only good things that comes out of this season.
Agreed.
Is that these guys hopefully
Luis Argudo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would be really tempted, and I don't think we're here yet, but if we rack up...
Oh, you're going to give the Patrick Goldin approach.
If we...
Play the kids.
Yeah, exactly. You play the kids. I think it's approaching the point in the season where we all have to just accept that we might have turned a corner, but it might be too little too late, and you build a team for the future. You get the guys who you plan on keeping, and you try to bring that into a unit, and you spend the rest of the season kind of trying to get that unit to gel. And then you fill in the missing pieces in the off season, and you push for next year.
I'm not going to say that you're wrong.
I want to see more Kate. I want to see more of all these guys. I really do.
Put yourself in Caleb Porter's shoes.
Yeah,
he's going to fight until the playoffs aren't there. You know, that's just what coach. You know, there's the same thing in 2016 with Greg Berhalter.
The
same with any coach.
Have
you
the
know.
Playoffs been there for the last month? Though I think that's my.
I get your point.
We're going to get to the math of the crew making the playoffs. It's not impossible. You mentioned Josh Williams.
Nothing is impossible.
you know, he comes off the dirty play from that psychotic Dom Dwyer. He gets a concussion. Frankly, I was surprised to see him on Saturday.
Yeah.
Not only did we see him, he scores a goal. He plays, I think, the best game I've ever seen him play. And obviously, you guys are the experts. But it wasn't just the goal. But he just stood out so much. His work rate was... He was everywhere. That was a man who was, for whatever reason, maybe he was fired up from getting elbowed in the head, but he was a man on a mission on Saturday. I didn't see him do anything wrong. He was that good. I was a little surprised he came off the field, but I understand, you know, coming off an injury, the oppressive heat. But while he was out there for the hour or whatever it was, he was top-notch for this club.
Bart, you're contractually obligated, to answer this.
Now, frankly, I don't know that, you know, I've ever seen too much wrong with Josh Williams' game, but didn't see anything agree with you Saturday. I mean, I think it is a little bit of a calming, and not just for me, but for dozens of fans and also maybe even players to just have that sort of veteran, the guy who's been there, and to see him come back. And I think for a guy like Keita playing against him, I think it looked almost like he fed off it, because you saw him making runs later in the game too, and throughout it, and just kind of that, you know. He seems like a guy who just kind of like gets people a little bit loose, not necessarily like, you know, yelling, barking orders or anything. But, I mean, that he was so eager and so quick to just get involved and look at like that guy where we haven't just seen it. It's cliche, but somebody who wants to go out there and score a goal. And you haven't seen the crew play with that sort of urgency throughout this stretch. It looked like everybody is always, looking for somebody else. I'm going to play that one perfect pass, and then, you know, I'm Jossie Zardes, but, you know, Santos is going to get that goal instead of taking a shot from a dangerous position, or Robinho. And Josh Williams, I mean, he willed it, terrible pun not intended, into the goal with that header. To go and run and get, and also, it was good to see Will Trapp involved in that. And
Will Trapp, yeah,
who's coming off one of his worst games,
he had a great game, and I think that we don't always give him his due, because so much of his game is, it's the stuff that you don't notice. If something goes wrong, it's nuanced. But it was not only the assist, but I felt like both he and Josh especially were so solid in snuffing out what they were trying to do from the mid-third into the attack. And there were a lot of balls that they played in that we were first to. It was that, you know, 50-50 balls. I mean, you talk to kids about that. And I felt like we took it upon ourselves to make sure that none of that was going to be easy for them. And Will and Josh both did a great job, not to take anything away from the rest of the fellas, but I felt like Will also played one of his best games that I've seen in a long time with this club.
I thought he did really well, and I hope that he can find that form consistently. I think that, you know, we've already lost Zach Steffen. I know that there were rumors earlier in the season that we might lose Will. I hope that they make Will an offer just to keep him here long term. I think that with all of the stuff that's gone on with this club, from Save the Crew and from all the grassroots stuff, having a group of local guys that you can build around, you know, your Josh Williams, your Will Trapp, your Abubakar Keita, the guys like that, honestly, that's such a cool
fans
thing.
Love it.
It's
Let's
such
not
a,
discount that.
It's
fans
such a cool
it.
Thing. And I, you know, he can be the guy. Mm-hmm. He's not going to ever be one of the top five midfielders in Major League Soccer, but he can be a solid player for the next, you know, 8 years at least, I feel like. And let's see him through. Let's have him retire here. I think you make him an offer. I think you make him a big offer, and you say, okay, well, we want you to be the face of the franchise until you retire. Stay with us. Let's do it.
I think his lackluster, for lack of a better term, Gold Cup showing helped him not get the offers from overseas. You know, he didn't get a ton of time as the tournament progressed. So it's kind of a benefit if you look at it from that standpoint, that he was on the bench and that's why he wasn't getting looks. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm not saying it's the only reason why, but, you know, that's why you're hearing rumors of Aaron Long at the Red Bulls getting looked at, because coaches see international tournaments like that and all of a sudden you're on the radar, and then they get their scouts digging into you more and things like that. Trapp didn't play a good
Aloy
chunk.
Room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So in a way that might have benefited the crew.
We'll see on that. Argudo, I know you and I talked about him last week. You took umbrage with my criticism of him, and I'll defer to you because you certainly know more than I do, Mike. But maybe it was seeing him in person the other night, but I felt like he was another huge difference maker, and the speed that he brings, and speed is so important. And you can't have enough of it, especially playing the position that he does. I felt like he looked really good.
Well, I think he's just – he's kind of an extension of Porter in a way. I think he also reminds me of a young Will Johnson, who Porter was a big fan of in Portland, and brought him over to Portland specifically to be an extension of him. I don't think Argudo is quite the player that Will Johnson was at that age, but – there's certainly that opportunity, but he's
what, 23 now?
Yeah, and he but he's going to bring it 100%. He's versatile. He can play all throughout the field. That's all you want, is somebody who's going to run everywhere, cause a problem, be a nuisance. And I think for a guy like Porter, it's even more imperative because he can resonate with a player like
that. Fitness is certainly not an issue with this club, as beat up as they've been with injuries. That was the ultimate test of a team's fitness, and they were running hard to the very end.
Well, yeah, and they were playing. They were playing a team who didn't play midweek.
Yeah,
you know, the crew.
Yeah, that's a good.
The
point.
Crew had to go play in Chicago. Montreal had the, you know, normal Saturday schedule, I believe. So, you know, yeah, I mean, now granted, Montreal loses a guy to the red card. That helps, certainly. You know.
That was kind of a mysterious one for me, to be quite honest. I don't know. Do you guys agree or disagree? A yellow card probably would have been sufficient.
It was soft. It was soft.
Yeah, I mean, it was the last man.
Yeah. I've seen that just be a yellow card.
Yeah, I agree. I think if we're talking Montreal, if we're doing a podcast in Montreal, I think we're
in
probably...
French?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My French is...
we're not happy with that. But, you know... It didn't make a huge difference in the game overall.
It's Bakary Sanga. This is a guy who's a former Champions League defender. Like that, I'm sorry, he could have, if he wanted to get him clean, he could have got him clean.
But the thing about that was, though, Sanga kind of reached around and like tugged on his shirt a little tiny bit, but then you saw, I don't even remember who went down with it. It wasn't Zardes. Who was it?
It was Akam.
It was Akam. Yeah. He felt the tug and then like immediately spun around and fell. Like
that's smart soccer.
It was smart, yeah. But it was a dive. As far as I'm concerned, it was a total dive.
I don't know if it's a total dive because he definitely got him though. He got him pretty good.
But it was, I don't know. If that would have been a yellow card and a free kick, I would not have complained. I would have been like, that's the appropriate call.
And thank God for VAR too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you know that was a hard one to call. It was a hard one to see. I was in 134 right next to the mm-hmm. stage, so I had no view as to whether it was offsides or not.
That was the fastest VAR I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like if MLS could do it that way every time.
Well, that's because once you saw it on replay, it was like yeah,
right. Yeah, as soon as you saw it, you go, okay, they got it right. So thank God for that because you know a year or two ago, you're not getting that one.
Right.
So it was. Kam had a great game as well.
Yeah.
Sosa. Is another guy that has looked good when he's in there.
Yeah, in Chicago, I thought he showed pretty well. What did he play, about 65 or so? Yeah. That game? Yeah.
So it's got like the last two games assist. Have given us so many positives, not to be Pollyanna here, but believe me, this has been a miserable season, and it's nice to have positive things to talk about here on the Massive Report podcast. Did we miss anybody before we go to break? Anybody else need some loving? It was
Luis Diaz. I guess we touched. It's just still, incredible for first run out there to just drop that teardrop right on Romario Williams and I thought
he also win a foul like right when he got out of the field?
Yeah. Well, he almost created that own goal against Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, right.
If they don't clear that off the line, you know, you're talking about a win.
He as soon as he comes onto the field, it's like I said about Rome. It's just. As young as he is, he's 20 years old. He just has a presence. It's not cockiness, but he has supreme confidence in his ability. You know, obviously, I've never met him before, but he just has that thing that you look for.
Youthful exuberance is a good thing in this.
But he has the skill to back it up too.
Yeah.
You could see what they saw in him.
Right,
you know?
And I think this is these are the type of guys that they want to sign. You know, they want guys that are going to make an impact. And Caleb's going to try and sign guys that he believes are going to be starters. You know, they're not looking to add depth. They're looking to add quality players. And you know, Luis Diaz, I believe, is a starter for this team once he gets fit and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy that kind of that similar. You know, Ethan Finley going to get down the line, look to cross balls, that type of thing. In comparison to the other side, where a Pedro Santos. You know, type of Justin Merrim type of player that tucks in and combines in the middle of the field, and you know that's the type of wing play that they want to have.
Yeah, I mean now it's not about the inverted wingers. Now that he's getting the players that he wants, they're playing a little more natural side, which you know they were emphasizing the cross so much. that's going to be helpful.
Well, I mean, look what happens when you put a cross where it's supposed to go. Now, it's got to be finished, we can talk about whether or not it's being finished at the right rate. But, like, you know, you put the cross under Mario Williams' head, the guy finishes, and you walk out of there with a tie. If that cross isn't right, and they weren't right often early in the season, and I think that's been my biggest criticism, Bart, cover your ears, of Harrison Offal, is sometimes he just bangs them in there. And sometimes that works, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But, and I think a lot of guys do that, or, you know, just hit it in there and hope it works out, as opposed to picking your head up, seeing the run, and putting it, you know, in that space. And I think you saw that Diaz is a guy who's going to, you know, see where the run's going and try and pick out a player.
Alex is dying over here. I think he wants to throw Zardes under the bus before we take a break. I guess I'll let you do that.
I think that
we're holding
up
a picture of him.
I think that we are. I wasn't sure if we wanted to talk about it or if, you know, this is the first podcast where we have had the opportunity to be positive in many weeks. So I wasn't sure if we were going to avoid any.
I think there'll
sort
be Zardes talk later if you want to.
I think we are one bump in form from Zardes away from being a good team. I don't think we're a great team.
Way to spin
that
positively.
I think we are. If he can find his form, we could be decent. I feel like we're not quite there.
We'll
yet.
Have more on Giassi later.
I actually had one other really good scientific did some research before this, and actually I mean this only half kidding. Crew managed 4 shots on target, at least, in these past 2 games. You know the last time they managed 4 shots on target in a game prior to that?
McBride and Stern John?
No, not quite. It felt like that. June 1st against NYCFC, another game they scored 2 goals. Maybe, just maybe, if they manage, like, 4 shots on target a game.
It's not that much,
that
by
it,
the way.
Which
no,
really isn't.
No.
It doesn't feel like that high of a bar to like set just to try to average that.
No.
And you got a chance. I mean, and it's not like they haven't had shots in the past game, but you've got, you know, Giassi, Zardes, to your point, skying it a handful of times, including this last game.
Header
but just
off the ground
inability
over
the bar. To get it on target and not trying to and looking for someone else.
Like, I kind of blocked all that out of my head because I was so excited by the overall performance, but you're right. I mean, there should have been at least 1 goal out of those opportunities that he had. 2, you think?
Absolutely.
you know, skying it over and, yeah, as you said, bouncing it with his head over the top. It was not a good look. And he was not in the MLS Team of the Week, but David Akam was.
Deserved.
And very deserved. We have another guy to talk about, and we will. We will talk about a man named Mukhtar joining the club soon. We'll do that as part of segment 2 on the Massive Report coming up next from Hendox. We're back on the Massive Report here at Hendox. We were just during the break. We often share video from this past weekend's action in MLS. I did not see the Joseph Martinez penalty kick for Atlanta United. That was the goofiest penalty kick I've ever seen. We can't possibly do it justice, so make sure that you search that down. Anybody want to take a crack at describing it? He was doing like the hokey
swan
pokey.
Kick. He was trying to do like or the
karate
kick.
Oh yeah, 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 like karate kick.
Just skied
it. It was the Karate Kid penalty kick. It took him an hour to actually get to the ball, and then he just shot it over the top. Yeah. I'm so tired of this overthinking penalty kicks. Is it becoming a lost art in a way? I mean, the odds are always in favor of the shooter by like 90%. But
except if it's Pipa at Sudek.
Yeah, I've seen so many stupid penalty kick strikes the last couple of seasons.
These guys
and
just
this
overthink
one was the
it.
Worst.
Yeah, they overthink it. To me, it's if you're a decent striker at the professional level, you should be able to tell the keeper where you're going and hit it and still make
just
it.
Hit
it's
the
just
ball.
Amazing how many people, and even when they score, like. I point this out all the time with the World Cup last year and the Women's World Cup, like, just terrible penalty kicks. And they go in and, like, it counts, but it's just, like, just put it in the corner. Like, if you're the designated player or designated penalty kick taker for a major national team and you can't place it in the corner every single time, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Murphy?
I can do it.
Murphy, you watch training a lot. How much do they work on that?
Well, we don't get to see set pieces.
Oh, okay.
So they deliberately keep that.
All right. So it could be 5 minutes, could be an hour.
Penalty kick counts as a set piece? They won't let you see the PKs?
Well, I don't know. I don't get to see set pieces.
Well, so. I'll tell you what.
Maybe they don't practice
just,
it at all.
Just seek out the Joseph Martinez penalty kick. It is example exhibit A of the worst penalty kick I've ever seen on any level. And I've watched 5-year-olds take penalty kicks.
Since we're talking about
the worst
set pieces and penalty kicks, the one penalty kick that was a set piece that I really liked, I think it was Johan Cruyff for Netherlands, where he took the penalty and he just kicked it horizontally like a foot. And then a guy ran in from the top of the 18 and just belted it.
Oh, Messi had
that's
one.
The only back in the day. They did that with Suarez.
Yeah.
That's the only set-piece penalty kick that they should not let you see when they're working on that. And Caleb Porter, we should do that because that will go – that'll get some serious numbers on Twitter for a better reason than that stupid Martinez penalty.
That was pretty awful. Yeah. All right. So we don't know anything about him. I'm hoping you guys might know a few things about Jonas Mokhtar. First of all, did I pronounce his name correctly?
You did.
Wow. I love
Sam's
it.
Sam's all excited.
Well, he says it Eunice, but you know.
Eunice. Hey, a guy can name himself. Jonas Mokhtar. Jonas Mokhtar. The shortstop, Jonas Mokhtar. What do we know about him? He's 27 years old. He's a wing player. He has a lot of international experience: Netherlands, Norway, Turkey, Saudi Arabia. 28 goals, 31 assists coming from the left side. As far as just
27,
he's 27.
27.
That's what I saw.
Yeah. He's 27.
So he's right in his prime. Another guy that didn't we get Olaf from Norway? That's his last professional experience.
Kristen Steindorsen?
Was in the Norwegian League. What do we know about him? What can we expect as far as where he fits in with the club?
I saw 45 seconds of highlights curated by MLSsoccer.com, and he looks pretty good. I don't know. He scored every single time. It was impressive.
He's batting 1,000.
If you're going to expect that, you're going to be sadly disappointed. And I'm concerned that that's what people are going to expect.
Yeah, look, there's a reason why I'm not saying this to be disparaging, but there's a reason why he was out of contract. He was a free transfer. It's because he's not lighting the world on fire. But look at him as a guy who can bring some depth and play either side of the wing.
He was not even just out of contract. He was released by mutual consent when this deal was about to happen. Mm-hmm. So he was initially with Stabæk, and they signed him in the winter. And my understanding is they let him out like a couple weeks ago.
Does he have injury issues? Or
is it like the
Auburn Tire style? He only played 2 games, 0 goals. So I don't know. I would think that he's probably a depth signing at this point.
100%.
One thing I will say on his Wikipedia page, they have a photo of him. Excellent beard, and it looks like he's got a nice car. So I mean,
we don't have enough beards on this team.
You can always, whenever you get a guy who's got like a good beard or something, or they've got a cool name or
is
cool
this
hair.
What it's come to
like Lala Sabubakar when we signed him, and he had that awesome haircut, like that like dreadlocks, but in like this. I don't even know what you call it.
It's like a cake pan shape.
Yeah, it's like a volcano of hair, you know? So whenever you get something like that from a player, at least that's something cool to talk about.
To hang on to. I'm
going to call him the beard. Jonas the beard. He shaved that.
I think you both are incorrect in terms of where you think he'll
play. You
think
the beard's not good?
No, I'm going back to soccer.
Oh, okay. What do you think about the beard?
So you agree that he will score all the time.
I think that we're somewhere in between Bart and Mike and Alex. I think they expect him to be a contributor. I think the idea I was talking earlier about how they, now they have a guy on one side in Luis Diaz, and David Akam can do this too, but obviously he's not a long-term guy who can stretch you. Is looking across the ball, stuff like that. This is a guy more like Pedro Santos, who can tuck in, looks to play in between the lines, looks to shoot, as you probably saw in the highlights Bart mentioned. He's not afraid to shoot. I think he's not a designated... Yes, I see the beard. He's not a designated player. He's not going to be a phenomenal signing, I don't think, but I think he's going to be a piece... he reminded me, and someone honestly, like, just when they were describing him, this is what I thought was a Justin Merrim, that type of player where, he's going to create, Justin didn't have a beard, he was going to create havoc.
He had plugs, though.
Teams are going to have to worry about them. I'm not sure. If he did, they didn't work very well. But I'm glad that this has just divulged into we know so little about Eunice here that we are just discussing hair stuff.
I will give you $100 if you sit him down for his first interview and you only ask him about his hair and his beard.
$100 isn't worth that. But no,
that's all I got.
I do think he's a guy they expect to contribute and compete with Pedro. You know, in the future when you know they have a number 10 and Pedro's playing on the wing where he's supposed to play, I think that that's how they see you know this being a competition between those two and you know may the best man win.
Was it economical?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
yeah.
They were you know
what the hell? Might as well do it.
Yeah. Not only was it a free transfer, but I was told that the quote wages are very good.
Okay, well, yeah. So,
and I think for the crew, not him.
Well, I mean. The guy's made some money in his career, I imagine.
I think he'll be all right.
Yeah. Right, Alex?
I think he'll be all right.
He's got a good pedigree. Again, that PSV pedigree didn't, you know, play for the senior team. And as I just, like, read it and look at it and drawing some stuff, he made the move in 2015 to Saudi Arabia. That's, you know, 4 years ago in the prime of his career. And that is not a move that you make to advance and develop as a player. It's a move that you make to get a little bit of money.
Okay.
They have money over there?
Wait, who did he play for in Saudi Arabia?
So he played for Al Nasser, so they're not bad.
Yeah, they're not bad. They're like a top 14.
Yeah, they're
so you're saying
Saudi Arabia?
Money?
In Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, Saudi Arabia.
But then he went to PSV's wall after that, and I mean, he's gone. He's been with some good clubs. He was at Stabæk before this, so I mean, they're pretty good.
Obviously, people see something in it.
The Stabæk situation's weird because he did well in the Eredivisie. I mean, not with PSV, obviously, but, you know, for a winger, and let's remember, like, not every winger is Cristiano Ronaldo, who's going to score a ton. You know, wingers' jobs are to be wingers. You know, even if you are a guy that shoots a lot and combines with guys.
It could be a situation like when Mensah went to Russia, and then that didn't last for very long.
Right, yeah, and so I don't know what happened with the Stabæk situation. I know that, you know, Caleb seemed pretty excited about this deal. You know, both how it worked. You know, he mentioned the free transfer, which obviously keeps money in the bank for them to use on other guys. But Caleb's also been very clear that, you know, I think I mentioned this last time I was on, none of these moves are forever, and that, you know, they're going to bring guys in that they like and, you know, see how it works, and they can, you know, make moves, and he's confident that they will, you know, continue to find the right guys. So, you know, it sounds like this, you know, I don't know if this fell into their lap or if this is the guy they were looking at, but it made sense financially. It's a guy they think can contribute. I don't see the downside, I guess.
When are we going to see
it? There isn't.
That's a good question. You know,
because you have all the red tape and the bureaucracy.
I mean, it's been a really weird last couple weeks because they thought a guy like Room, a guy like
Jordan Hamilton,
and Diaz would all be there much quicker than they were because of visa stuff. They haven't been.
It's strange that Hamilton is still not here.
He was here today.
Okay.
Today was his first day practicing with the team. So
we've already forgotten about him because we brought in so many players.
You've seen Romario Williams score goals. So, yeah. You know, who needs Jordan Hamilton?
Yeah. All of a sudden, we seem to have a lot more depth, and that's the thing that this club needed.
We don't need depth, according to people online. We need just starters, no depth.
Well, and that's, like I said, that's kind of the Caleb Porter way. Keep bringing in starters, make them compete. You know, he told us today.
That's the thing.
Yeah. When he told us today that with Jordan Hamilton there, with Luis Diaz there, you know, whoever else. Yeah, I'm starting to lose track of the number of guys they've signed recently. The guys, you know, the new guys that were there, having the national team guys back, they were playing 7-on-7 today, and it was the best 7-on-7, which is a drill they've done all year. And so, you know. If you're a Crew fan, I think you're optimist. That sounds optimistic, at least, if, you know. And I don't think that's coach speak. There's no reason for him to have brought that up to us unprompted.
Do we want to do the Twitter mailbag now, or do we want to wait? Let's do it now. I've got the questions in front
of
me.
Sam says yes.
All right. Sam's in charge.
I like these questions, by the way. Good job, people.
All right. Dave writes, now that we have a real owner, are there any plans for the Crew to develop a USL team to develop club depth? Sure would be nice to have a team in place instead of loaning players out to many teams. That's a great question, Dave.
So,
thank you.
During the 300th episode, that was a question I brought up to Bez, and he said it's certainly something they're considering, but it's about the right fit. Like, do we do it in Columbus? Do we do it somewhere else? But that is something
Cleveland that
they want to do. So I think it's just, you know, once
How about Dayton?
Once the stadium is built, and that's kind of on their way, then they'll start looking into that, is the way he explained it.
And I know Caleb Porter is a big fan. He's brought up multiple times, you know, J.J. Williams, he brought up as a guy that, like, if we had a second team, he would be there, and we'd be able to control, you know, how much he's playing and getting him games and whatnot. So obviously he had that in Portland and is used to that. He wants it. It's a big financial investment, though, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's
a couple $1 million a year if you do it right.
Right, and you ideally have people coming out to those games, but you have to put them somewhere, you know, whether that's in Columbus, whether that's somewhere else. There has to be you have to have them in the league, you know.
Cleveland makes them
sense.
What if the owner
possibly had another market that is just 2 hours
I think we're overthinking this.
Well, but you need people then to come to the games.
I think Cleveland would support it.
And maybe they would. But
especially
these
with
are
the Browns on the upswing.
The crunch.
You know?
Yeah, the Cleveland
there
crunch.
There you go, the Cleveland crunch.
But it would be great. I mean, if they could feasibly do it financially, which is, I mean, if every MLS club could do it, they would.
How
I mean,
many clubs are doing this, where you see, like, Red Bulls, too, and so forth? How
there's
many
a,
do we have?
There's a decent amount
I think
now.
There's about 80% of the league.
Really?
I don't know if it's that high.
It's like 75-80.
No,
yeah, it's
I was
more than that.
No, because none of the – hardly any of the MLS 1.0 teams have them. Yeah. I mean, it's like – it started with, like, Real Salt Lake is probably – I mean, Red Bulls obviously does.
Right.
But
Dallas.
Like, Dallas – but, like, Atlanta doesn't.
Seattle has
they
one.
Do.
Right? Seattle has too.
Yeah, no,
Kansas City has the Slope Park Rangers.
Yeah, no, Atlanta has one.
I don't think so.
I don't know if they do or not.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't know.
All right, well, you guys look it up. I'm going to go on to the next question. Ethan writes, I would love to come on the pod someday and discuss MLS and crew and other topics. Yay or nay?
Well, you can apply next time we ask for people.
It's an open podcast.
No, it's not,
you
Sam.
Can just
don't let people
well, we're
start
at Hendox. I mean, it's a public house. Come and have a beer and hang out. Hydro Lettuce. What does that mean?
What?
His question is, why does everyone hate Zardes? I don't think anyone hates Zardes.
Alex Stanek does.
I don't.
We were talking off the air between breaks that, you know what? He is a really delightful person, if
he
I
is.
Could use a David Letterman.
He's a great
word.
Guy.
I will speak a bit on Zardes. So I don't hate him. I don't think he's a DP. I think that contract...
That's accurate.
...is going to age poorly. I think that he... is producing about as good as he's going to ever produce, and I don't feel like for the money that we spend, we're going to get enough out of him. But that's not on Zardes. That's on Bez,
yeah,
and that's
on
Caleb
money.
Porter, and that's on whoever and crew ownership. That's not his fault.
That's probably the biggest mystery of this season to me.
Yeah.
Is that. What was done and when it was done and why it was done. And I don't think we have all the answers yet. I see a path to him being a productive player again, but he certainly runs hot and cold.
Yeah.
I think he's an MLS replacement level or starter level striker. And I think, you know, if your crew, it's a Columbus market, it's a team that had, you know, you want to give the fans something to be excited about. And you think that at least you've got a starting caliber level striker in this league. And you lock that down because you don't have it. I don't think he's ever going to be a 19 or even maybe 15 goal scorer.
He
but
was
if
a
you
19.
Can make him again. I'm
right.
sorry,
okay.
again.
There you go.
Because how many other – how he's had a grand total of 2 seasons scoring double-digit goals last season and then what in 2014. This isn't, you know, something he hasn't, you know, doesn't have that entire career of, you know, regularly scoring. I think if you can get 11 goals from Jossy Zardes, you know, on average, I'd be thrilled with that. It's overpaying a little bit too much. Yeah, probably, but you don't see that much consistency with MLS strikers.
Coming into the season, my thought was if he gets 10 to 12 goals, that's a successful season. If people thought this was going to be – that last year wasn't going to be an anomaly and that he was going to score 18, 19, 20 goals every year, you're out of your mind. But 10 to 12 would be a successful season.
Well, and I think you have to remember that while a forward's job is to score goals, there's more that goes into this in a salary cap league.
Sure.
And so you have to think, okay, where are we going to spend our money? And you know that Pipa's getting old, and even before this deal, you know, you knew that, and then he tore his ACL – that's a position you're going to have to spend money on.
Yep.
And if you want a legit striker, you know, you look at, we were talking about Brian Fernandez. You know, that's a guy that Portland brought in, similar level market, though they sell out their games. But they spent some real money on him.
They spent $10 million.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want a striker who's going to score consistently, and he's scored beyond consistently, you're spending some serious money. So, would we prefer to have a number 10 to replace Pipa and have a striker we can rely on to not only score, you know, hopefully 10 to 12 goals, but his work rate is phenomenal. That's why Greg keeps calling him the national team. His defense, he starts the defense up top, which is a super underrated thing that most people don't pay attention to.
100%. He works.
And
that's never in question.
He's a phenomenal locker room guy. I mean, he is one of the most liked players. You talked about, you know, in your guys' interaction with him, how nice he is. I mean, they love him. So, yes, you probably overpaid a little bit. And I agree with you. I don't know. There is some mystery behind it. I don't see Giassi demanding a new contract, despite coming off a career year. But, you know, maybe agents got involved, and who knows what happened. This is all speculation on my part. But I think they realized, hey, we've got something here. We're not paying a huge, you know, it's not like he's a huge DP. And we can get him for a fairly reasonable, maybe a little bit overpaying, like Bart said, and then, you know, we'll spend some money on other positions to really, you know, kind of boost the rest of this team.
You mentioned Pipa. Kalen writes, and who is on our wish list for a Pipa replacement?
Messi.
Just the whole world.
Is it Pedro Santos?
No. I know that they do not. Like, Pedro's been good for the most part, inconsistent at that position, but it's not his role.
I mean, he's 31?
Yeah.
He's not all of a sudden going to become a 10 at that age. It's not how it works.
And, you know, he's played that position before.
Right.
But that's not his natural position. Right. He does tuck in, so it makes sense to use him there. But, you know, I saw this question earlier and started to try and brainstorm, but
There's a lot of players out there.
Can you unearth a player like a Valeri from Argentina? Somebody like that who will come on relatively big money for MLS, but isn't going to break your bank like if you're going to bring somebody from one of the top European leagues.
I don't think I want to know who it is, because if it's somebody that, you know, a recognized name or brand, you know, they're overpaying for the tail end of their career, I don't think that's worth.
Nobody
it.
Knows
just
because Valeri
we've got money doesn't mean
there.
That you just spend it.
Yeah, it needs to be somebody who can play that position well, you know, like the Scalottos, and people may have heard of Scalottos if you were a soccer guy or girl, but an Higuain, like, you probably only knew about that because of his brother.
Right.
You know, even if you can go a step above that, you know, a younger guy maybe with already that level of play, because now we've got, you know, more money to play with, then I think that's how you do it. Now, whether that's Argentina just because they've had luck there or other countries, but, you know, that type of level. And, you know, ideally you'd like to have this guy for 10, 12 years, you know. So if you could go a little younger, I think Higuain was, 27, 28 when he came over? That would be fine. But even if you could find a 25-year-old that's really starting to get going and you really like what you're getting out of him, you know. And I don't know names, but I think that's ideal.
That'll certainly be a focus in the offseason, I would think.
It's got to be priority number one. I think a center attacking mid, and I'd like to see a center back brought in, quite frankly.
I think that there are options out there. I think you
in the world of soccer,
I'm saying if you're replacing a DP level player or getting someone to at least complement a player who's no longer a DP, I would go big, and I would look at the top leagues. I would look to the top division in Germany. I would look to the top division in Italy. There are a lot of good number 10s in Italy that you can get, who are towards the tail end of their career, that you could bring over. Somebody who's, you know, potentially on the market, although they're saying they're in the plans. A guy like Giacomo Bonaventura from AC Milan. You could, in theory, you could even go Bezbachenko.
No,
could
he's,
go out.
He's the GM.
He could go out and get Javinko again.
Yep. What,
you could do Javinko as a 10. You could totally play Javinko
as a 10. You
could,
but he's not coming to Columbus. It's not happening.
Like, he can't be happy in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, but also he's, 31-ish? So, and the whole reason why he ended up leaving Toronto is because they wouldn't pay him. You think they're going to do it now in Columbus?
Okay, so maybe his price has gone down.
I have a quick question.
Yeah, I live with the Saudis for a year and, you know, go to the kingdom.
Quick,
who knows?
Quick yes or no question from all of you. You know, if you can work it out, do you bring Higuain back next year?
Yes.
Yes, 100%.
If he checks out health-wise.
Sam says no. Everyone else says yes.
No, I'm saying Yes, but it's got to be on a significantly.
Sure, you have
salary.
To. You have to make
it's
it got to
be club friendly.
But I think if you, could have, I mean, ideally, Frederico Higuain as a glue guy, if he's willing to take. And I don't think that's something that we can just, like, take for granted. But if he's willing to take a little bit of a diminished role, willing to, you know, maybe be a guy coming off the bench or, you know, coming off pretty early as a starter and really working to groom an heir, but, like, maybe if he's a guy – I mean, it seems, at least to my observation, that he enjoys – living in Columbus,
he likes
being here. And so if you can work out something, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, there's a job for you in the front office or scouting.
And I think exactly, and you and I have talked about this before, Bart, but if he has any interest in, hey, I'd like to stay in Columbus and be in an ambassador role or,
what about a player coach role?
Yeah, and I don't know what his post-career, you know, I could see him being a guy who potentially sails off into the sunset and, you know, does his own thing, but If he does have any interest in any sort of, you know, sports management, sports, anything that they could help him with,
right.
In addition to, like Bart said, taking a reduced role. And, you know, we never know. He could come back from the ACL, and you don't expect it at 33, whatever he is.
34,
but 34,
yeah.
But
how old was Zlatan? I mean, granted, Zlatan's
sure,
Zlatan,
he's
but...
He's a freak. But, yeah. You know, maybe he comes back and, you know, he can still produce. But, yes, I think it just... You know, if you're negotiating contract wise, you need to be thinking the future and talk.
Give him 150 grand.
Did Dr. Pete do that surgery?
Dude, he's.
I don't know.
Okay.
Better than 150 grand. Are you kidding?
200 grand for a guy, a 34-year-old attacking mid.
I want to know how he is before
he's
we
done,
start
done,
throwing money
around. He's
you don't
putting
pay
his
guys
dues.
What they've done. You pay them what they're going to
do. I understand that in general, but Frederico Higuain, that's a little bit different.
It's the Kobe Bryant contract.
Man, we can't do him like we did Guillermo or like we did Frankie.
That's right.
No, that was a whole different.
I know, I know,
send them
but
both to LA.
Come on, this is these are the Haslams.
Yes.
The Haslams have money.
Yeah.
They can give Frederico Higuain the money to let him finish his career as a
Crew player. Okay.
Bart said.
Yeah, but we're not going to run.
What Bart said.
Real quick, I want to touch on that they do have money, no doubt. But they're also smart business people.
Right.
And when there's not...
They kept Hugh Jackson as the coach for the Browns, and he won one game in 32.
But there's money coming in from the Browns, and they just bought the team. With
they're
the crew...
A stadium.
With the crew, yes. They've already invested to buy the team. They've already invested to build a stadium. I think that the idea was... For a lot of fans, was like, "Oh, we have NFL level money,
right?"
And I maybe it'll get that way, but I think they need to start seeing a return on their investment.
Yep.
And I don't mean like they're actually making money because this is MLS,
right?
But before they're going to start, we talked about Portland and Brian Fernandez. Before they start doing something like that, you need to start having Portland level attendance. Where
start coming to the games, people.
And I think that's going to happen when the new stadium is open and ready to go. I think we're going to see a resurgence in attendance. I'm not even worried about that.
I just mean, but to temper expectations with these signings, especially in the next 2 years.
Yep.
Now maybe they go out and splash to try and open the stadium with a name,
sure.
And maybe I don't know, but I just think, you know, they're smart and they're not just going to throw a ton of money. Now you got to spend money to make money, and I'm not saying you don't, but I've just talking to people when I'm at the games or when I'm at Endeavor, or, you know, whatever, and you know, I mean, the Higuain name is always one that gets thrown around, and it's half joking, but. There are, you know, there are some people that are like, well, why don't they just go out and sign him? And I'm like, well, you can't do that. You know, they're not going to do that. And, you know, he's an extreme example. But even a Brian Fernandez, $10 million guy, you know, when you're the second lowest team in terms of attendance and you don't have a major TV deal through MLS that's bringing in money anyway, even if you're not selling out stadiums, you know, it would be silly for you to pay $10 million and then that salary – to do that, you know, just financially. And
that's never been our model anyway.
Correct. This is a small market team, even with big owners.
And we've won a cup, and we've been to another one, and we've won a U.S. Open Cup. It's not like we've done nothing.
Two supporters.
But I'm not talking about buying, spending a $7 million, you know, salary.
How much
on somebody.
More money do we need
Frederico
to give
Higuain
where you're happy, Bart?
Yeah.
Another 50 grand?
I would be happy with him at 250. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what he's going to ask.
Let's go in the middle. 200,000. Done.
There
all right. We're bringing him back. Thanks for all the questions. I think we need to do this more often.
I think we need to do it every week.
Absolutely.
Great questions. Thank you so much for those. At Massive Report on Twitter is where we will put out the clarion call for your questions.
There's one more that I think we should touch on real quick.
All right. I thought we were running out of time, but go ahead.
Yeah, just and we don't have to touch on this long, but someone asked, Tongue Life asked, should we expect a finalized stadium rendering soon? Not that the initial ones weren't incredible, but I know the front office was taking feedback for a bit. I think that it would not surprise me if we start hearing stadium news sooner rather than later.
You think that they'll wait until after the season, or
No. I think they want to break. Yeah, okay. They want to break ground in October.
Right.
And so, you know, now whether they put out renderings, I guess, before then is, you know, I guess you could wait. But, you know, there's work being done, I know for a fact, on
Can
everything.
Can you park back there at Clippers games anymore?
That I do not know.
No. Okay, that's a good sign.
But, yeah, I think there will be stadium stuff, you know, coming out as we reach towards the end of the season, get into the fall. So, you know, whether they put out new renderings or not, I just wanted to address that. I think there will be definite stadium updates as we get closer to the end of the year.
That's exciting. So, yeah. I can't wait.
And from everything I've heard from the, you know, talking to Pete and the people that went and saw the different stadiums around the MLS, and, you know, I think they may have even looked at Tottenham Stadium, which I think is pretty cool. I don't know if they went in person, but I know that's one they kind of checked out. You know, I think fans should be very excited. I think they're going to – this stadium's going to be awesome. I don't know much about this new IBM deal,
right?
But it sounds interesting to me. I know that the LAFC Stadium has it. The Falcon Stadium, which is where Atlanta United played, has it. So I don't know what that'll bring to the stadium, but that's a positive step.
I hope they take their time to build this one because, you know, they built – well, it was a necessity. They built Crew Stadium in 8 months.
Yeah, they had
or whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, so, July 2021 is what they're saying for an opening date.
So a little less than 2 years.
Yeah, so you've okay. – yeah, so you. I think that's plenty of time to
– Sure.
If they could just build my tunnel from Betty's to the stadium.
Yes!
We did bring that up.
Just walk outside, man. Columbus is lovely in the summer.
In March?
It's only 95 degrees or 7 degrees.
I don't want to go out in the snow.
No, they just need a bathroom in the press box.
I'm pretty sure open container laws don't count underground.
That's supposed to change. We want to be underground. Bart and I want to be underground with the mole people going between.
So there are
between Betty's and the stadium. All right,
there are new renderings that exist. I'm not sure whether these are the final renderings or not. I don't know, but they have definitely come up with a slightly new design that I think fans will be really happy with if that is the final design. They are working hard on it. I know that there were some Crew fans filming something earlier today. I don't know what that was. I don't think it's stadium related, but it could be stadium related. I don't know. But yeah, I know that they are working hard and that they're coming to kind of – they're nearing the end of that process. So
all right. Hopefully. Well, I can't wait, and hopefully we'll – as the season winds down, if the playoffs don't work out, we'll at least have the stadium to get excited about. There are – these days you can put odds to anything – and there are playoff odds for Columbus Crew FC, and obviously they are long odds. And it starts again this Saturday night at Red Bull Arena, an 8 p.m. kickoff, a little late for whatever reason there. In New Jersey, we will preview that game and take a quick look at the playoff odds as we come back on the Massive Report in a moment.
We're back here for segment 3 of the Massive Report, and it's brought to you, as it always is, by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCGBag on Twitter and Facebook at GCGBag96 for all the most salient predictions, like they did for when they shared the starting lineup this past game and pointed out that Josh Williams was going to score a goal. That's right. You can see that when you follow the Greater Columbus Golden Boys on Twitter. And remember, Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, also champions of the Crew Water War 2019. Definitely not failing, and officially sponsors of the Massive Report.
Didn't you guys have a White Claw squirt gun fight? Did I hear that correctly?
Well, we had a White Claw squirt gun manned
by... You get that in your eye. That's got to hurt.
Hey, well, that's why you aim for the mouth, Brian.
Okay. Well, a shout-out to Ralph, who loves White Claw, yeah. And we hope to see Ralph again soon. All right.
Do we?
No, we don't.
I do. Screw I like that. Ralph.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
I like Ralph.
Sorry,
we
take back everything we said.
Ralph, yeah, I was just texting better. With them. You're get fine, better. Ralph.
All right. We're going to talk about playoff odds here in a moment. First, we travel to New Jersey in Red Bull Arena for a match with New York Red Bulls on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Red Bulls very much in the playoff hunt and pretty much in at this point.
Well, you know, the thing with the Red Bulls, they are one of my favorite teams to watch because they just have so many players that can make things happen. I mean, Brian White has been terrific this year. I mean, when you have to bring a guy like Bradley Wright Phillips off the bench, that's
impressive.
It is very impressive.
I noticed that the other day. Like, I didn't watch them in a while, so I watched them this weekend just to, like, prep for this game. And I was like, oh, he's not starting. Then I went back and looked, and, like, he hasn't played a...
Well,
that's shocking.
Well, hold on. So he was hurt for a little while.
Right.
And Brian White caught fire. But, you know, they bring Phillips on, Bradley Wright Phillips as a sub. That's amazing. But, I mean, Luis Robles is still killing it in goal. Daniel Royer, I think, is one of the most underappreciated players in this league. You know, they have Tim Parker and Aaron Long at center back. I mean, they are just stacked top to bottom. I love watching them play. I got to be honest, I'm not overly confident going to New Jersey and getting a result. I hope I'm wrong, but the Red Bulls are just, they're clinical.
Well, the first thing the crew need to do is show up on time. I had the kickoff time wrong. It is 7:30. I saw 8 o'clock somewhere, which I thought was weird for...
It's 8 o'clock somewhere.
All right.
Actually, I don't know where it is.
Like, okay. In the middle of the Atlantic?
Kick.
No, even then, it's still on the hour. Sure, yeah,
well, this is a big game for Red Bulls. 5 points separate them in fourth place with first place Philadelphia at 39 points. So, obviously...
How is that still happening?
It's amazing.
I mean, Philadelphia, you talk about a stunner this year.
That's where, like, when the Crew are top of the East and people are confused. I mean, we are not because we think they're good.
But after the Crew traded away their two top scorers from, like, the past couple seasons. I mean... DePong and David Akam.
This Red Bull game will be interesting because, like we talked about earlier, we felt the Chicago game was a good step. You come from behind twice, you get a result on the road in a place where you have not, frankly, gotten results. And then you come back home, you get the win against Montreal. Now you want to build on that, and you know you're going on the road again. You're going to spend a lot of time on the road this last portion of the season. Can you get a result? I think that's the biggest thing. You know, and we'll talk about playoff odds and what they need to do in a minute, but, you know, can you get a result? Can you, at the very least, leave that game feeling, hey, we played well, you know, this is a playoff team, this is where we need to be. I think they need to get a result to keep momentum going, but at the very least, you need to walk out of that stadium with the crew being like, okay, we gave it a good fight, even if they lose the game, and, you know, this is something we can continue to build on. I think it's tough at this point in the season to do that without getting a result, and I think it will be tough, like you said, Mike, but you know, I think this team is trending up. I do. I think the new additions, you have a week to prepare, and I think I've mentioned this in this podcast before. The LA Galaxy game, they win that game. It's a good win. Then a few days later, they play LFC, are down 1-0, which may have been a fine result at the time if you'd lose that 1-0. You give up two goals, now you lost 3-0. That's kind of demoralizing. Then you go a few weeks later, New York City FC. You get a tie at home. You're feeling a little bit better. You lose guys to Gold Cup. You have a three-week break. They haven't been able to build momentum. Now they have a little bit. They have a week to prepare. They've got their guys, for the most part, everybody here. You know, can you kind of get this thing rolling a little bit with, you know, everybody in place? You know, some new guys that maybe New York's not entirely familiar with, or at least
absolutely.
Not your system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you build? And at the very least, I want to see them build on the performance last week. And I thought they did that from Chicago. I want to see that next week, at least to have me feel confident.
I think,
real quick, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, and we'll touch on it in a second, I know, but, like, at least feel good about the way you ended the
season. Moving forward, sure.
Yeah. And, like, that, I think that's continues this week and just...
Did anybody watch the Red Bulls game over the weekend?
It was fantastic.
Yep.
It was Red Bull in Orlando. Here's the thing. You're talking about...
1-0 to Red Bulls.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You're talking about, you know, getting a result. The main thing is Columbus needs to dictate this game. And if I'm being completely objective here, Red Bulls dictate pretty much every game they play in. And I watch a lot of their games because I really enjoy watching them. They dictate things. So to go on the road, I hope I'm wrong. I'm just saying, I think it's a tall task.
I agree with you, but this isn't Jesse Marsh's Red Bulls team.
They've lost. Look, in fairness, they have lost more games this year than they lost all last year already. So I get that.
Yeah.
But I also think they are starting to hit their stride now.
And that could be.
And here's the biggest thing. I think now they're starting to figure out what they want to do with their back line. They've had guys coming and going on their back line. Now I think they feel pretty stout with Long and Parker. And Robles is just playing like an absolute monster.
I feel like it's weird. Been a long time since we played against them. You know, yeah, that was back
week,
in
week
what?
One.
Week right. one, right.
Yeah. Well, so, that was Red Bull 2, essentially.
Yeah, that was their JV squad.
It was their B team, essentially. And I feel like we can't really draw anything at all from that match, from either side. Now, the fact that we are a desperate team looking to get maximum points every week, am I wrong in thinking that the best way to approach each of these games is to almost play like you're down 2-0 at all times?
Yeah, they have to just go out, forget being defensive, just go out and score goals. It's plain and simple. They need to, and I know that sounds simple and everything, but what I mean is
he's a soccer coach.
Here's the thing. They need to have their foot on the gas and just go towards goal. Just go gangbusters and don't worry about giving up a goal. Play arena football style soccer and just go, we're going to score 3 or 4 goals in this game, and if we give up 1 or 2 along the way, so be it.
And it sounds goofy to say that for a team that has had so much trouble scoring goals this year, but that's the way they have to play, and maybe they're going to learn a lot from it, if nothing else.
Well, and, you know, with the new guys like Diaz and, you know, Williams will hopefully see some time. Maybe you'll get Hamilton at some point. Why not? Just go. Yeah. I mean, let's do just something different than what we did.
Draws aren't going to do it for you. Nope. And I think the one other thing is that because you've got, you know, we talked about for a while, you know, is it sort of like, you know, these guys getting into a slump, and then, you know, what's going to happen when these Gold Cup guys come back and see this? Well, you know, this entire locker room's stuck in this morass, and then suddenly you get some new injections, you get some new players, you move some people out. I'm not saying like a Joe Bednick was bad for the locker room. He certainly was bad for the results. But you get some new blood in there injected into it. And suddenly, look, this is something new. I mean, I'm not saying that the crew's suddenly going to – I am saying the crew's going to win out for the rest of the season, as I always predict. But it does feel like there's something, and it's not just the fact that they won. It's they won, and there's new blood in there, and guys that had been out of the picture and now suddenly back in like a Will Trapp and a Giassi zone.
Here's what's fun about MLS is that unlike any of the other professional sports in this country, by the time you hit the stretch run and we're in the stretch run now. Any other sport, you know where you stand. I mean, in baseball, sure. I mean, with the wild card and everything, there are teams that are like, are we buyers? Are we sellers? But the only sport where you can come from this, when your fan base can go, okay, look, the odds are against us, but there's a chance that we could come from the back and sneak into the playoffs and make some noise.
Look, Patrick Murphy's St. Louis Blues were last place at the mid-season
point. That is a good point. They were terrible until they put Bennington in goal.
Murph, comment?
Yeah, the crew just got a new goalie.
What?
It's going to happen. We're going to win the MLS Cup. You heard it here reported by Patrick Murphy.
What? No, but in all seriousness, you know, the way the Eastern Conference is shaping up, and this is kind of bleeding over into the next conversation, but three, you know, if they could somehow roll off 3 wins in a row, not necessarily right now, but really at any point before it all goes to hell, if you can get 3 wins in a row in this league, you're in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, we're not in the
You know, being contention at least.
Yeah, LAFC with their plus 35 goal differential. I mean, but in the East, everyone's kind of packed together, and only Cincinnati really has a goal differential. Where you and ours isn't good, but they're a minus 30. But well, I mean, you feel like who's the goalie, by the way?
For who?
We just signed a goalie, did you say?
Or Eloy Room. We were talking about him earlier.
You said, you were looking at your computer going, we signed another goalie.
No, I was like, just...
What? All right, you confused me, Murph.
No, okay. but I mean, I do think also if this team, and Alex, you were talking earlier about, you know, just let's play the kids. I think with the way the playoff format is, if you get in, you got to go play on the road. Even if you get in as the last, was it seventh seed?
Seventh, yeah.
Yeah, but if you get in, it's just one-offs. I mean, there's no home and aways anymore. So, you know, you can New York Giants your way to a Super Bowl. And, I mean, you know. Not
all right, but the odds are against us. Absolutely. I mean, if you just crunch the numbers, where are we at now?
It's not in the realm of possibilities to pass Chicago and Orlando. I do think. I think we're going to see an ascending New England team keep moving up. Montreal could drop down a little bit. I think at best we probably finish eighth in the East.
At best they could still finish first in the East. That's just how that works. I think, unless they've been mathematically eliminated from that. I'm not looking at the standings, but that's the best case scenario.
I just have another White Claw, would you, Pat?
I don't know. You know,
Ralph.
I think we should abandon all hope. And simply shoot for 4 points.
The Sunshine Brigade here.
4 points against Cincinnati. I want to win in a draw against Cincinnati.
Why wouldn't you shoot for six?
That's not very...
I don't know. Here's the way I will be happy with four.
No, that's 6 points.
Here's the way I look at it.
You watched Cincinnati play recently?
Yeah, no, I just want four.
You should be happy with nine.
I just want four.
Here's the way I look at it.
You give me four, I'm happy.
And again, I swing back to what I just said. This team has been basically half remade in the last few weeks. To Murph's point, and I really, he was staring at his computer. We just signed a goalie. And I thought, well, he's so plugged in. I thought, what, we signed another one? Why? But no, to your point, Room, we don't know what he's going to be to this club yet.
Yeah.
You, as we saw with the St. Louis Blues in hockey, you can ride a hot goalkeeper. So that's one element here. Plus all the other signings. We don't know how all these guys are going to fit in. We don't know how our opponents are going to game plan for all these guys. We don't know what we're cooking up. But I think I'll just leave it here. The odds are against us, but it's fun that we're still in the race. And the fact that we don't know what we have any more than our opponents know what we have at this point, I think we are the wild card of wild cards.
Sure.
Why not? Why not us? Why not now?
Hey. Patrick did do the math, and if Crew went out and also everyone else in the East loses every game, I think we can win the East. I don't think that they could win the President's Supporters Cup because LAFC's got, you know, 46, but the Crew, if they win out and everyone else loses, we could win the East.
The Crew could get 54 points. At the end of the season, if they just win out. And right now, as Bart just said, LAFC is sitting on 46 points.
It's all in front of us.
And the Philadelphia Union are sitting on 39, so it is not mathematically impossible.
Are we buying them at all, the Philadelphia Union?
I don't know how you get here to this point.
Toronto.
This league is dumb enough that the Philadelphia Union could be good.
It's just like
it's good enough.
Sure.
It's Philadelphia, absolutely.
Would they win MLS Cup?
No.
Why not?
Yeah, well, okay. LAFC's.
You just brought up the point about like the Giants, and though you don't have there, it's not home and home.
Sure.
It's one off.
Sometimes, yeah.
And
well, and
this is a team that has lost. At home, all of two games.
And how many?
But LAFC sits on the other side of that bracket.
Okay, but how many good Toronto FC teams did we see not make the playoffs despite having $100 million in salary and some sort of big?
And they're below the line right now.
I know.
I think just two. Once they started spending money, they were in back-to-back MLS Cups.
Guys, look, it's going to come down to Atlanta, New York, and I think DC is going to make a run. And don't over. I know everybody craps on Bruce Arena, but he's got something going on there in New England, and they have talent. Brad Friedel couldn't make it happen. Bruce Arena's making it happen. Don't overlook them in the East.
He did that against FC Cincy.
Pardon?
Come on, he did that against FC Cincy this last game.
No,
that was DC.
Oh, yeah, you're my bad.
You're sorry. Confusing the, old yeah, Bruce Arena with...
Yeah, it's not 99 Bruce Arena.
Yeah.
It's 2019.
All right, let's go around the room and make our picks, and then we got to get out of here.
For the Red Bulls game?
Yeah, for the okay. Red Bulls. Oh, wait, well, we're not... We're, you know, I'm not going to say we're making the playoffs.
It's 4%, right? That's the 4%. Playoff percentage.
Basically, that's what you
so
put it at.
Listen, it's 4%.
Exactly. Tell me there's a chance.
Sam says...
What's the supporter yeah. shield chance?
It's... It's
4.000. All right, let's just pick this. They got to take it one game at a time. That's the worst cliche in sports, but that's what they got to do. Give me a score, Mike.
All right, I'm going to say, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to say Red Bulls 2-1.
Alex?
I'm going to say it's 1-1 until late in the game, and Eunice the Beard Mokhtar comes on.
You mean the guy who's not eligible to
and
play
and scores
yet?
A dunk. He'll be eligible by kickoff, right. And he's going to score a worldie. It's going to be like a 30-yard goalkeeper's office line. He's going to chip him.
All right.
And Red Bull Arena is going to partially collapse. No one will be injured. But we will come away with 3 points and a moral victory.
Wait a minute. So is he going to screech into the parking lot? And what does he have, a BMW? Is that what it was?
It just had a nice leather interior. I couldn't see anything beyond that. But you could tell that he was a classy guy.
It could be a Kia with a nice leather.
Listen, owner. He's a classy guy.
Kia Sorento,
he's a
baby.
All right, Murph, give me a pick.
LeBron drives a Kia.
What?
He was in those commercials.
He drives a Kia in the commercials.
2-1 Red Bull.
That's not fair. It's stealing.
All right, Bart?
3-1 Columbus Crew, including a goal from Josh Williams. Again,
and I just want to say, every single game that we have won, Bart has predicted a win.
Yeah, I wasn't there last week, but I from home predicted the Crew were going to win.
Yeah.
So
you know, he's got, you know, 100% of the games that we have won, he's
predicted
a win.
I love Bart's energy. 2-1 Crew!
Yes!
All right, we got to get out of here. Let me find anybody else have anything to add while I find my ad copy that I need to read before we wrap things up. And by the way, we have next home game's Toronto, right? Is it Toronto? Does anybody know?
That sounds bad. Right.
Oh, no, it's FC Cincinnati. Duh. Yep. That's sold out. Isn't it? Is it sold out?
I don't think it's really close, though, but it's not sold out.
Yeah. So do we have a pair of Cincinnati tickets to give away? We do. So be listening to... Be listening to the Massive Report before the Cincinnati game, and we got a pair of tickets. It's going to sell out.
We might be the last two tickets you
get. Hell is real, is real. It's still weird to hear that in advertising. Coming up, hell is real. But I love it. I look forward to that. But Red Bulls on Saturday night at 7:30, and we'll be back here Monday to break it all down and look ahead.
Can we officially disqualify all Cincy fans from this competition? Can we put that in terms and conditions?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. If you're a Cincy fan...
Yes.
Go kick rocks. Yes.
You're not listening to this podcast anyway. That's
not. And let's also eliminate the entire state of Texas.
Let's tell the FC Cincy fans that they are, and then we just don't pick them because then we get more listens.
Sure. Can we like print out fake tickets or something that say you suck? Section sharp. U seat suck.
Well, can't spell suck without UC.
We'll send them to Fortress Obetz. All right. Thanks to 1A Property Development for their sponsorship of the Mass Report podcast. 1A Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams, a lot like the new Crew Stadium. Check out 1APropertyDevelopment.com for your next projects. Guys, it's been fun. It's been a pleasure to talk about a win. Let's talk about another win next Monday back here at Hendox. Thanks, everybody.